Today's date is November the 8th, 2008. The time is approximately 3:44 p.m. This is a sworn statement of John Prescott Metcalf. John, would you acknowledge for the record that you're aware that I'm tape recording this statement?
I'm aware you're recording.
Okay. I have introduced myself to John Metcalf as Bill Branscombe, a private investigator employed by the law firm of Robert Bernhoft, the law firm having an interest in an individual that John Metcalf knows as Troy Stratus. John, when did you first meet Troy Stratus?
In the summer of 2002 when I was working at P.F. Chang's in Los Angeles.
And in what capacity were you employed there?
I was a waiter.
And about how old were you at that time?
I was 21.
And how did you actually come to meet?
Troy was in for lunch. I did not wait on him, but they didn't even notice him, actually. But I guess when he was leaving, one of his assistants came up to me and said that Mr. Stratus would like to meet you. And I said, who's that? What's going on? And, you know, I sort of talked to the guy. He was on his way out. But I ended up having a phone conversation with him later that evening and talked about my talent and ambition in the music industry. And he claimed to be a producer who was currently working with recording artists and had an opportunity for me in the music business. And then as we, you know, sort of talked more and more, he talked about a project he had called Plantation, which was a television show he was developing, and he also said he had a part in that for me.
So you were an aspiring musician, actor, who was working as a waiter in the Hollywood area, and this fella wanted to meet you, and as the conversation followed, he was able to offer you some opportunities.
That's what he said.
Now, how long had you been in the Hollywood area?
Just a couple or a few weeks.
And where were you from before that?
I'm from Portland, Oregon. And I was at a time going to college in Boston at Emerson College, but it was a summer. And it was a summer before I was starting a semester abroad through Emerson College in Los Angeles.
Now, at that time, had you actually done any work as an actor?
At that time, no, not professionally.
Okay. Now,
I'd just been in Los Angeles for 2 weeks, and I had taken on a manager at that time, which Troy encouraged me to drop, as he encouraged me to quit my job, and I did both of those things.
Okay. Now, this would have been 6 years ago.
Yeah.
Now, since that time, you've had some experience as a you are an actor at this point.
Yeah, correct. That's how I make my living.
Now, would you say that you were a bit more naive at that time than you are at this time?
Absolutely.
If you were in a restaurant for whatever reason and a person just approached you and had wonderful opportunities for you, would you be as likely to buy into that today as you were in 2002?
Oh, no. I mean, you'd have to, not without any reality behind it. I mean, if someone came up to you and started a conversation in a restaurant with me and appeared to want to offer me opportunities, then there would be fact-checking and, you know, who do you work for? And, you know, I don't really see that happening to me at this point in my career. But, you know, at that point, I was very naive. I didn't know how the business worked. And I was, you know, trying to get my bearings in Hollywood. And here I am, you know, many years later, sort of with a knowledge of how the industry and how the city works. And, you know, that certainly would not happen to me again.
Now, as you sit here today, do you believe that his motivation was to get you established in music and film, or did he have any other motivations?
He claimed that it was, and, you know, if it had worked out that way, then maybe it would have worked out that way. But it seemed that, in hindsight, after I ended our business relationship and friendship, it was evident to me that he was interested in me in a romantic capacity, and that's something that I was not interested in, which is why I left.
Okay. But you were associated with him there for a time.
Right.
When you quit your job and joined up with him, what happened next?
He just sort of running around Los Angeles for a couple days, he bought a yellow Hummer, and then we went to Las Vegas with one of his assistants or a couple of his assistants. I forget exactly who was there. I know that Barry Feldman was at least in Las Vegas when we got there. He was also in Los Angeles when I first met Troy. I'm not sure if he drove with us in the Hummer. I forget, but he actually may have driven his own car over there, now that I think of it. But so we went to Vegas, you know, 3 or 4 days later after he first met me, after I'd quit my job and left my manager. And he also brought me to a new agent, an agent that he knew in Los Angeles, Jana Luker Agency, J-A-N-A-L-U-K-E-R. And I was actually represented by her for a couple of years and had a good, you know, working relationship until I moved on to another agent.
Okay. Now, you mentioned Barry Feldman. What do you know about his relationship with Stratus?
Not much in terms of specifics, but what I saw was that Barry often accompanied Troy when Troy was allegedly buying something. He was there when Troy picked up the Hummer at the auto dealer. He was there. He went to a this was later on, maybe a year later or something, or 6 months. I really don't know. Barry accompanied Troy when he was looking to purchase a house in Malibu. There was a check exchange between Troy and the realtors to put down some sort of a deposit, start the escrow process or whatever. That didn't actually ever end up, amounting to anything. The transaction was never completed. Barry was also always in Las Vegas when Troy was in Las Vegas, because Troy said that he was looking to purchase land, and Barry had some land on the Strip.
What, if anything, did Troy represent to you about his own personal financial status?
Troy said that he had millions and millions of dollars. He was on his way to be a billionaire very soon, and that he acquired his wealth through contacts and oil investments in the Middle East, as well as AOL stock that he bought early on and sold for a tremendous profit.
Did he mention having relationships with any royal families?
Yeah, he did. He mentioned, he talked about some stories that he had with some members of the royal, I can't remember which country it was, but he talked about relationships with a prince in one of the Arab countries or something, and how great life was over there, and I don't really remember the specifics, but I do certainly recall him telling some stories about members of a royal family of one of the countries over there.
Do you remember any of the stories?
No, there was one story, I don't remember any specific details, but some of the points that stood out to me were this big opulent party. There was a beautiful woman that was presented to Troy by his friend, who was a prince, and the woman was ready to do anything, but Troy decided not to for some reason. But again, that's very shady. I don't know. I just remember hearing stories of opulent parties with members of some royal family.
What do you know about Troy's sexual persuasion?
Well, at this point, I think hearing the stories about Troy, one would deduce that he is a bisexual. I've heard stories about past girlfriends, that he's been with, Nicole Miller before she was with Eddie, and then again after that whole thing fell apart for a time, I guess. But he talked about, being with her beforehand, and his, whenever the trailer for one of Eddie's movies came up or something, Troy would, he would sort of not be very happy at that point in time. He also claimed to have dated Whitney Houston. I had an old girlfriend named Vanessa. You know, all these people I never saw. I never saw him with a woman I always saw. There was one, you know, relationship that I saw him in, firsthand, which was with Terry Pepin. And any of the other sort of casual things that appeared to be going on with Troy were all with men.
Okay. How did the thing with Terry Pepin work out?
I don't know exactly how it started. I think that Troy met Terry, you know, around the time he met me, but totally separately. I don't know where they met or how their relationship started, but I do know that they were in a relationship with each other, romantic relationship, and they, you know, would stay with each other when Troy was traveling in hotels. You know, they had a room together one time at the Biltmore in Montecito, the Four Seasons. Is that what it was? Whatever the Four Seasons Resort is in Montecito. They had a little, what's the word I'm looking for? They had a small little house there, whatever. And Troy was with them for a while, and when they broke up, and I guess Troy was just very devastated. They broke up, I think, around in the spring of 2003, and I witnessed that firsthand when I was with Troy in Vancouver. He was putting together a goodbye present for Terry to ship to him wherever he was, which was a big, you know, expensive chest filled with mementos and also a contract for a role on Plantation, which was the show that Troy claimed to have been in pre-production for.
So this Plantation, that was the same production that he was going to get you a role in?
Right, yeah. And actually, if I remember correctly, the role that he was talking about with me, he then sort of changed his mind and said, well, maybe it's not exactly right for you. I think that, you know, Terry's going to be the one to take this role. And, you know, at that point, it was sort of, I was on the music track, and it also didn't seem like Plantation was amounting to anything. So I was, you know, not that I lose too much sleep over that, but what I think his motivations were to sort of try and make me jealous about that, which didn't work. But Plantation is a show that Richard Hack wrote, who's somehow a friend of Troy's. They've known each other forever. And Richard wrote it and was going to produce it, and Troy was going to direct it.
Did it ever get off the ground?
No.
Now, you mentioned Vancouver. You were with Stratus in Vancouver?
Yeah, I went to Vancouver with Troy. Troy was in Oregon, which is where I'm from. I was visiting my parents at the time. And I know people at Nike, the company, the apparel company Nike. And Troy knew that and asked me to set up a meeting with Nike because he was putting together the opening ceremonies for the Beijing Olympic Games, and wanted to talk to Nike about a possible sponsorship. So I arranged a meeting. Troy came in, had a meeting with Nike at their campus in Beaverton. That's the last I heard of that after he left there after the meeting, which lasted an hour or so. And he was on his way to Vancouver, and at that point I was sort of, you know, again, fed up with the lack of progress that my music career that Troy had promised me would get going was having. So he told me that I should come to Vancouver with him, and I did, and I stayed there for about 2 weeks, at which time I was introduced to the staff at Next Level Media, which had a small office in Vancouver. The people that I remember who worked at Next Level Media was Tamar Hegan and three other people whose last names I don't remember, but Kevin Larkin and Janice. Janice was the CFO. Kevin was his sort of point man, right-hand man, and Tamar and Larkin were, you know, there in the office as well doing whatever they were doing. Troy lived in a penthouse on the top of a high-rise building in Vancouver somewhere.
Now, during this period of time, from the time you first met him in the restaurant up to now you're in Vancouver for a couple of weeks, did you ever see him make any money?
No.
What was his spending like?
He spent a lot of money. He spent money that someone He spent like a millionaire would spend, which is what he claimed he was. But I had no idea where the money was coming from. He again said it was all from, you know, investments and friends that he had in Middle Eastern royalty families, and then also the AOL stock and that, you know, the money just appeared to keep coming in, but I hadn't heard of, nor have I ever heard of any projects that Troy had talked about that he had actually completed.
Did you ever have reason to formulate an opinion as to where that money actually came from?
Now that we're down the road a bit, I was given a call. Tamar Egan called me, who used to work at Next Level Media before that dissolved, or at least before the office dissolved. And she called me out of the blue after the whole office had, you know, quit because something happened. I don't know what happened, but apparently it was pretty explosive. From what she tells me, from what she told me, and this was several years ago now, but the gist of her call was to get away from Troy as soon as possible because he's a con man and he had been living off of money that came from this woman, Vivian, Viv. I'm not sure if her name was Vivian or not, but Tamara told me it was Viv. Apparently her name is Viv True. I don't know if I ever heard her last name or not at that point, but that's the woman, and Tamara claimed that that was where Troy's money was coming from.
And she was, what, do you know what position she held with his Next Level Media thing there in British Vancouver?
No, all I know is, British Columbia, all I know is that she was involved in real estate. I don't know of any, I never saw her. I never saw her in the office. I didn't ever hear that she was actually in business with Next Level Media.
I was referring to Tamara.
Oh, sorry. Oh, Tamara. What was the question?
What position did she hold?
I don't know her exact title, but she was in the office doing whatever she was doing. Executive assistant work, pre-production work on, you know, projects like Plantation, or, you know, possibly like recording. I don't know. From what I gathered, the brief conversation we had after she ended her relationship with Troy, and even sort of noticing what was going on at the time, everybody in the office was a little bit sort of taken aback about the day-to-day work that they were doing. It didn't really fall in line with what they were hired to do, and it just sort of seemed like they were, you know, going out here and sort of perhaps, you know, taking care of shipping this big box that Troy had arranged to give to his ex-boyfriend Terry, and doing these sort of weird personal things. While I was there for the 2 weeks, I really wasn't sure what projects they were actually working on specifically.
Okay.
I know that Troy was constantly looking for money, not looking for, but just, you know, awaiting the next transfer, or he would constantly go to Toronto Dominion, the bank there, and, you know, do something while he was there, waiting for money to come in from overseas somewhere. That was a pretty common day-to-day occurrence.
And you think that the money wasn't actually coming from overseas?
I have no idea if there even was money.
Okay.
I just know he went to the bank. I don't know what he was doing there.
Okay. What was
O2? O2 was a company Troy talked about that he was going to launch. I don't believe it ever got launched. It was selling portable oxygen devices for people that they could breathe this oxygen and feel great or something. And it was supposed to be the next thing because, you know, air pollution is going to be so, you know, prevalent here, especially in the future. I think in Las Vegas he was looking to establish some sort of a headquarters or storefront on Las Vegas Boulevard there on the Strip to do that. That's what he talked about doing with O2.
Now, you said that he spends time in Las Vegas. Have you seen him in any other places where they have casinos?
Yeah. Las Vegas, I saw him gambling. I saw him gambling in Puerto Rico at the Wyndham El San Juan Hotel in Carolina, and at the Foxwoods Casino in Connecticut.
What are his gambling habits like?
He gambles a lot of money, and every time I was with him on the floor, he would generally lose, as, you know, most gamblers do. That's why casinos are in business. But Troy gambled a lot of money, always in the thousands of dollars, even, you know, sometimes thousands of dollars per hand. I could sort of try to recall numbers that he would gamble. You know, he would take anywhere from the low thousands to, you know, $40,000 would be sort of a loss that he would take in one day of gambling sometimes.
Okay. Now, you were with him in Vancouver. You were with him in L.A. there for a bit. You were with him. You've been with him in Las Vegas. You've been with him in Puerto Rico. Anywhere else that you spend time with him?
Yeah, L.A., Vegas, Santa Barbara, Vancouver, Puerto Rico, Connecticut there at Foxwoods Casino. Saw him in Boston a bit, and in Provincetown, Massachusetts. Spent some time there while he was doing whatever he was doing with Richard Hack, in terms of plantation.
Now,
and in Portland, Oregon.
Did you actually get a contract with him of some kind?
I was given a recording contract by Troy through Next Level Media. The contract was for, I don't have the contract anymore, this was, you know, probably 5 years ago or something. And it was for a certain number of albums. I remember the advance on the first album was to be for $50,000, but that contract was never signed. It just sort of seemed to fizzle for some reason, and I was, you know, certainly never given any advance by him.
Okay. So your total time with him would have been how many years?
What I said, it was 2002 in the summer, probably 3, 4, 5, probably, you know, probably knew him and was in contact with him for about 3 years. The last time when I ended our relationship, business or personal, it was at the Foxwoods Casino in Connecticut, where I had flown myself out there on my ticket with my money. Troy promised to reimburse me, which he didn't at the time. And I was there to write and record music. But Troy just ended up gambling most of the time, and there came a point one day where I wanted to go up to my room and write music. And Troy wanted me to stay with him and gamble with him on the floor, and essentially he blew up at me on the casino floor. I went up to my room, grabbed my stuff, went to the bus station, and took off. I went to Boston, stayed with a friend for a day, and then flew back to the West Coast. That was the last time I saw him until maybe 8 months later, and that was the end of that three-year period, I say, that I knew him. And this whole time, he still owed me what I believe was about $2,500 through reimbursements that he promised me, which, you know, at this point, I was never expecting to get back, and, you know, wouldn't have asked for it ever again. But he happened to show up at the restaurant I was working at one day, about, you know, 8 or 10 months, I would guess, after the Foxwood incident, and ended up giving me a check for the money he owed me, which I assumed was a way for him to get back on my good side and to, you know, start up this whole music talk again. But at that point, I was much wiser for the experiences, because of the experiences I had had, and, you know, in no there was no way I was ever going to get involved with Troy in any capacity ever again. He, I believe, called me a couple more times after that, calls which I never returned. And like I said, when he moved, came into the restaurant that day, that was the last time I saw him.
Okay. What do you know about his relationship, if anything, with Richard Hack?
I know that they had a relationship for many years before I ever met Troy. Troy told me that there used to be some sort of a romantic thing between the two of them many years back, and that Richard still wanted that to exist. However, Troy didn't. I know that Richard lived in Hawaii for a time, is what Troy told me. What else? You know, Troy visited Richard at his house in Provincetown, Massachusetts. Richard was riding plantation, and yeah, I mean they seem to be, you know, friendly, and it sort of seems like a weird relationship to me. I mean, Troy is Troy, and Richard is very, very particular. Seemed to be a very smart man. And at this point, I sort of question why, you know, such a smart guy, such a well-known author, would still choose to be involved with someone like Troy.
Okay. Did you ever have any dealings with Samantha Ivey?
Yeah, I met Samantha several times. I don't know when I first met her, but saw her in, you know, in Los Angeles. She was a star in Vegas. Saw her all over the place. She was Troy's, I think, stepsister, and also one of Troy's prospective recording artists. She, you know, had some songs that I heard that apparently Troy had recorded. Her and Naeem, Troy really didn't like. Samantha's mother was Nancy Wilson, the singer.
Okay. Do you know the name Dennis Rush?
Yes.
What do you know about that?
Dennis Rush was, that whole incident happened before I met Troy. Troy was in Hawaii somewhere, putting together a project with Nancy Wilson, which was funded by investors who, you know, I don't know the specifics of it, but I remember when I was first trying to find out who Troy was, and my parents were as well. We did, you know, an online search, and what we were able to find was information regarding the settlement for, I think it was around $2 million that Troy was deemed to have owed Dennis Rush and whoever the plaintiffs were on that case. And Troy assured me that the only reason the settlement was made against him was because he missed the date and was not there to sign the papers that would have vindicated his name, and it was just a matter of time before his name was cleared on that matter, and here we are, you know, 6 or 7 years later, and that website still exists, and apparently he still owes them money.
From what you know at this point, does that surprise you?
No.
Do you know the name Damien Lichtenstein?
Yes.
What do you know about him?
Damien is a director. He lives in Southern California, near Los Angeles. I met him through Troy. We went to Damien's house one day, and Damien had a couple of associates over who were musicians, songwriters, and the purpose of the trip over to Damien's house was to possibly acquire some of these songs that these two gentlemen had written so that I could record them.
And did you spend time in recording studios and that sort of thing?
Yeah, recorded in both Los Angeles and in Puerto Rico. Two tracks, I think, are what we recorded in Puerto Rico. but it was just sort of, you know, getting a bunch of the tracks down. Nothing was ever mastered or completed, and then the same thing went for another song that we recorded in Burbank, California, with a producer named Lorenzo Pryor. Nothing ever actually amounted there either.
Now, what do you attribute that to? I mean, why was he going through the motions if nothing was going to happen?
Well, in my dealings with Troy and in watching the dealings that he had with other people, there would be talk of many projects or, you know, getting the ball rolling on many projects. For example, with me, it was starting recording tracks, but there would be many unfinished projects that Troy would hold over my head or other people's heads until he got what he wanted out of them, you know. And it took me a long time, but once I realized that what Troy wanted out of me was some sort of a romantic relationship, and that was no place that I was interested in going, I left the situation.
Is there anything that I've not asked you about that you think I should have asked you about or that you'd like to talk about?
Nothing particular comes to mind.
Okay. Now, since this statement is taken over the phone, do you have any kind of identification there with you?
Right. Driver's license from California. And my driver's license number is D as in David, 585-1125.
Okay. And your full name is John, common spelling, Prescott, common spelling, Metcalf, M-E-T-C-A-L-F?
Yes.
And your date of birth?
August 10th, 1981.
Now, has anybody offered you anything or threatened you with anything or intimidated you in any way to get you to make this statement?
No.
You know what perjury is?
Yes.
You know you have an obligation to tell the truth in a sworn statement?
Yes.
Well, mindful of your obligations to tell the truth in a sworn statement, do you swear or affirm that the statements you've made as I've commemorated them on the tape are true and correct to the best of your knowledge and belief?
Yes.
Okay, that will conclude the statement of John Metcalf. The time is now about 20 minutes after 4 Eastern time in the afternoon.